Goodbyes are never easy. When someone we love passes, we're left with memories, many emotions, and the question of how to honor their life. In those first few days when grief is most raw, it can be hard to think how we will move past the pain. And yet, something remarkable happens when we come together to honor a life well lived. At their best, funerals aren't just ceremonies. They're a moment to pause, to remember, to laugh through the tears, to celebrate. Really a bridge between sorrow and healing. And behind every meaningful farewell is a highly specialized team quietly orchestrating the details, holding space for grief while crafting an experience that feels true to the person they're honoring.
So many of us feel like we're called to funeral service. You get to be part of the change process that an individual goes through when they lose a loved one. And you think, I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to make any sacrifice necessary to help this family.
This is Darren Forbes, a funeral director who has helped hundreds of people honor and celebrate their loved ones for nearly 40 years.
Then the real world hits, and it's your Friday afternoon. A family walks in, unscheduled, unannounced. You've got 2 to 3 days coming up that you get to have off, and you've worked a lot of hours. You've made these huge emotional deposits with these families. You're looking, you know what? I want to get away for the weekend. I want to get away with my family. And sometimes what you find out is, wow, I'm a caregiver, but now I'm irritated by this family. It's just inconvenient. And what you get is you get a resentment. And now it's easy to see that family as kind of an object rather than a family that's going through some struggles that they have no idea how to navigate.
None of us like to admit what Darren just shared, that there are times we resent the people we serve, either professionally or personally. And that highlights a foundational idea we talk about at the Arbinger Institute, that there are two ways to show up with the people around us. We either see people as objects or as people. And that sounds simple. Of course, I'm going to see people around me as people. What else am I supposed to see them as? Especially when they're grieving the loss of a loved one. But as Darren shared, even when we're deeply committed to our work, it's surprisingly easy to slip into seeing people as obstacles, tools, or just tasks. If you've listened to the show before, you've heard us talk about an inward and an outward mindset. But whether you're new or returning, today we're diving deeper into these two ways of seeing and engaging so that we can stay connected to people as people, especially when we're exhausted. Welcome to Leading Outward, the Arbinger Institute's podcast, where we explore the tools and ideas we've used for over 45 years to help people solve their toughest leadership and organizational challenges by leading with an outward mindset, seeing people as people. I'm McKinley Otterson.
I had a Friday afternoon coming up. A family came straight from the hospital. This husband walks in. His wife had just passed away suddenly after giving birth to their fourth child and came in with his parents and her parents, came straight from the hospital unannounced. There was nobody to meet with them. And I had a list of other things to do in my administrative role. So on that Friday afternoon, all of a sudden I'm thinking, well, there goes my weekend because I'm going to have to be available to this family. It's high maintenance. There's a lot of questions. It's unexpected. There's going to be a lot of interest. All of a sudden, I'm thinking, all right, there goes my days off.
When Darren was talking about his experience with this family, I found it so relatable. I don't like to admit this, but even though I've never been in that circumstance, there have been lots of times where I've been put into a situation where my help and support is required in some way, and I'm not happy about it. For a variety of reasons, some of the same things that Darren mentions here, that it was unexpected, there's a million other things to do, you're tired, you've given a lot of yourself already. There have been times for me where I genuinely feel like I don't have anything left to give. And then I'm put into a situation that requires me to continue to give. So this experience is so incredibly relatable. But at the same time, it's not helpful. It's not helpful to actually be in that place. And Darren was able to recognize that in himself and in the situation. He describes his experience using the word inward, which is the mindset where I'm focused on my needs, my challenges, my objectives, and the people around me are either helping or hurting my efforts and goals. But when I have an outward mindset, I still see my own needs, challenges, and objectives, but now I also see and consider the needs, challenges, and objectives of the people around me.
I recognized when they walked in that I was going inward, and I thought, I will never be able to take care of this family unless I do so in an outward way.
How did you know that you weren't in the place you needed and wanted to be?
I was able to recognize the emotions that I felt. I remember walking through the foyer as that family was already in the foyer, and I'm thinking, all right, I'm a little resentful. I've got 1,000 things to do. I have a tendency, McKinley, to get defensive. It's a natural gift that I'm not proud of.
Me and you both, Darren.
So I thought, okay, I've got some emotions I'm feeling that are not setting me up for a great relationship. And the good news is I didn't need to go sit in a room for 15 minutes and do yoga or meditate. It was just in the course of walking down the hallway that I was able to course correct.
How did you make that pivot?
I thought, I have one opportunity to take care of this family. We often say it's like landing a plane on an aircraft carrier. You get one opportunity to get it right. That's something that we actually talk about with our staff is when you have a family or a situation that arises that causes you to act in a way or to start feeling in a way that you know is not conducive to the role of a caregiver, reframe it, repackage it, think about it differently, especially when I'm going into a situation that's high emotion, high commitment, a lot of inconvenience, and is going to require my full attention. And realize I'm not getting out of this, so I better make the best of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like I can stop and go, you know what, family, come in tomorrow. I'll be in a better mood when you come in. It doesn't work that way. It really is correcting the story that we tell ourselves.
I love that Darren used the word correcting when thinking about the story he was telling himself and how he needed to reframe that story. This isn't a recommendation to make up a story or reframe your reality in a way that isn't true. It's simply a recommendation to reframe the reality in a way that includes the truth of everyone involved. Darren started out with a story which was, great, there goes my weekend. I'm exhausted, my family misses me, I have a million things to do. I had plans that I was looking forward to. And the thing is that is true. But the problem and the danger with that is that it's only Darren's reality. It's not taking into account anyone else's. So when he recognized this symptom of an inward mindset, he was able to say, okay, I need to make sure that I'm taking in the reality of everyone. His reality stays the same. He's still disappointed to not get a much needed weekend with his family. But now he adds to the story the experience of these other people. That this family is in shock and despair. That they've just lost their wife and their mother, their daughter, their sister. And they've come to me for support through this process. And you can just stop there. You don't have to continue the story by saying, and I'm really grateful I have this sacred role and responsibility. Because maybe you don't actually feel that way in the moment. You don't need to falsify what you're experiencing or make something up. But for Darren, simply by seeing the whole reality instead of just his reality, enabled him to engage with this family in a much more sincere, helpful, and outward way.
Let me tell you what happened with that family.
Please.
They didn't know what to do. All they knew is that they were hurting. And when they came in, we're around a conference table, and the oldest daughter, the husband, and his parents, and his mother and father-in-law were all in the arrangement, and they were almost kind of curled up as if to say, I can't take any more. We just started talking about her life, talking about her passion. Her passion was piano teaching. She had a grand piano in their home. They loved it. And she had 40 piano students.
Wow.
And because we were able to take the time to really recreate the narrative, we ended up having a service at the funeral home where we brought in the grand piano. And then the night before the funeral, we had a piano recital. Her casket's at the front next to the piano, and all of her students came with their parents and performed their recital piece. The student would perform their piece and then tell the congregation why their teacher meant so much to them. So you can only imagine how important that was for the family. It was transformative. I mean, it was life-changing. It changed the trajectory of their life and their children's lives forever.
That's so beautiful. I play the piano, Darren. I spent many hours in the house of my piano teacher, and I play the piano at my great-grandpa's funeral almost a year ago now, and is just touching the tender spot for me because I'm just imagining how meaningful that really would be to this family and being able to celebrate her life and the value and the beauty that she brought to so many people. And what's the likelihood that they would have come up with that idea on their own? They're trying to navigate all the emotions and just the shock and trauma of this reality.
Absolutely.
It's also incredibly unlikely that you would have come up with this idea had you not been fully engaged with them in an outward way. If you were focused on yourself, you probably wouldn't have had that idea because it's an idea that you got to after really engaging with them to get to know this woman.
Our primary role is to tell the loved one's story. How can I help tell the story if I'm not taking time to listen?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to take time to listen if I'm objectifying that family.
If this episode was sent to you, thanks for being here. That means someone in your life listened to this and thought of you, which is such a gift to have relationships like that. And if someone has come to mind while you've been listening, it's probably because what you're hearing could help them solve points of friction in their life. So care enough about them to share this episode. An inward mindset can be so sneaky. Most of the time, we aren't intentionally objectifying the people around us, but we have to intentionally combat our human tendency to view people with an inward mindset. Like Darren, Dr. Steve Jackson has also experienced the negative impact of an inward mindset in his profession as a physician.
I'm busy. A lot of patients to see, both inpatient and outpatient. And at this particular time, I was paged by the ICU. They have a patient there that had a new spinal cord injury. And there were some questions that the patient and family had that they didn't feel comfortable answering. And that's my specialty. And as they should have, they paged me to come and talk to the patient and to the family. It just so happened that it didn't fit into my schedule, quote unquote. I was already late to clinic. I still had two patients waiting in another building for me to come and see. They're likely not going to be happy because they had to wait. I'm likely going to be in clinic longer than I want to. I'm likely going to be late for dinner at home, and my to-do list is going to be longer. And one thing leads to another, which leads to another. And now I'm stressed, and now my mind is just going with regards to how this one event can throw off my whole day. And I thought to myself, well, I'm sure this can wait till tomorrow.
It's important to point out here that there will be lots of times when something can wait until tomorrow, or maybe someone else can handle the situation altogether. But our ability to actually identify and determine when something can wait or when it needs to happen right now will be totally clouded with an inward mindset.
I took a step back and realized this team is paging me for a reason. Somebody needs me, and I need to be there for them. And so upon arriving to the room, I was greeted by not only the patient, but a family reunion of folks. I see grandma and grandpa. I see son and daughter. I see aunt. I see cousin. I mean, the room was full. And now I'm thinking, okay, what are they going to ask? How long is this going to take? I don't think a switch flips. I think it was one of those dimmer switches where you slowly turn the light on. And in the midst of some of the anxieties that I had about my personal situation and personal obligations, I immediately realized that this isn't just a patient with a new spinal cord injury that needs the help of a specialist. This is a person who has family that loves him, who has obligations of his own, hopes, aspirations, dreams. And I asked myself, how would I feel with a new injury such as this? And I realized that I would likely be scared. I would likely be just really reaching for any glimmer of hope and information that's going to help me cope with what I'm going through. Now, it didn't change my mindset immediately because I was still late to clinic. But over time, over the course of maybe 15, 20 minutes, my mindset changed from inward to outward. And I realized that it's my job to do as much as I can to ensure that those hopes and those dreams and aspirations are met, or at least be in position to reach those. To this day, I'm good friends with this patient and family. And when I see them, it's a family reunion, except now I'm part of the family. I grew that day as a physician. I grew that day as a person. I think that if I didn't change in that moment and at that time, I would have had an inward mindset the next day. You look at patients and other people as obstacles. Hey, you're in my way. You're in my way of getting to what I need to do. And I know that sounds pretty bad. Having an inward mindset is not a good thing in any way. If you want the truth, this is the truth. It looks ugly, it sounds ugly, and it feels ugly. The worst part about it is that it doesn't just affect you. It affects the people around you. As a physician, I'm able to connect with people. But as a physician with an inward mindset, my ability to connect is seriously and severely impaired. And if that's impaired, my ability to deliver care is impaired. And if that's impaired, then I'm not living up to my promise that I made when I became a doctor.
You might hear that and think, okay, that seems a bit extreme. I don't think I'm not living up to my promise as a doctor if I have an inward mindset. But I know for me that I can really easily justify having an inward mindset in specific situations by just conveniently not thinking about the ultimate impact that my mindset and behavior are having. It's really beautiful that Darren and Dr. Jackson's individual discoveries of recognizing and adjusting their own inward mindsets allowed them to be so much more helpful to the people they were supporting. But from a leadership perspective, the question is, how can I help my team and organization operate in this way? And I asked Darren to talk to us about what that actually looks like within an organization.
So McKinley, we're very purposeful about our purposes, and these are in sequential order based on importance. The first purpose in our organization is to make significant differences in the lives of the people we work with. The second purpose is to make important and significant differences in the lives of the families we care for at some of the most difficult times in their lives.
Darren, I would have this question for any business, but particularly in what you are doing for the families you serve, I'm surprised that taking care of coworkers comes before taking care of your customers.
It sounds backwards, especially when you hear the statement and the phrase, you hear it often, oh, the customer is always right. Anything for the customer.
Right.
Well, what I've learned is if you can't take care of your coworkers, if I've got a coworker and I see that they have a need and I have an impression to help them, if I'm not acting on that and helping them, we're not, as an organization, going to be able to take care of our families. And so as we start to share that with our teams, they go, yeah, that makes sense. I got to make sure my coworker has the information he or she needs in order to serve this family well. I want to make sure they're set up for success. And so now I'm sharing that information. I'm taking care of them.
I'm just hearing you talk and feeling overwhelmed, right? I'm just like, oh my goodness. So you have people coming to you at peak overwhelm.
Yeah.
Oftentimes. So how do you ensure that this is sustainable for you and for your teams? And you talked about having 3 days and then, but maybe you don't get those 3 days and you're exhausted. Like, how do you ensure that your team members don't burn out and leave? Like, how do you keep people?
Your question is really about the emotional burnout. Well, they're tied together. Because in an organization that's focused on helping their associates and seeking not to be a problem, we don't see the fatigue, the burnout, the turnover nearly as much as we do in other organizations who aren't understanding or who are not aware of principles associated with mindset. And we bring on new businesses every year, and those businesses often come to us without having had any mindset training. And there's a definite difference. They become more fatigued, more burned out.
I'm just thinking of the pushback that people would have of, Darren, you're seriously telling me that I work at a hospital and I have 20 nurses under me. You're telling me that burnout would stop being so much of an issue if we were more aware of how to be helpful to each other?
Yes. And it's not to say that burnout will not occur. I couldn't imagine, especially during COVID, being in the medical field. That emotional fatigue, that drain, it's unparalleled what they have been through. But in the normal day-to-day work, if I've got a coworker who is sensing that another coworker is struggling because let's say that this other coworker has met with a family that lost a young baby, and then met with another family with a lot of trauma involved in the loss. If I've got a coworker identifying that, this person's reaching out to the other coworker saying, what can I do for you? I can see that you have been dealing with some real difficult things. What can I take off your plate? That's when we're in what I call the service flow. If that becomes something that the organization and a lot of the people within that organization strive to do that, the turnover that you might see in the business drops. I've seen it drop. But the emotional burnout is not as deep and is not as significant and not as frequent. Think about when you've personally burned out or been near that. And when I'm in a situation like that, if I feel like I've got a bunch of cheerleaders around me, that's not just they're cheering me on, but they're willing to help alleviate.
Yeah.
Oh, I can go another day. I can go another 2 days. And when you're in a business like funeral service, that is essential.
That's really beautiful, Darren. Right after I graduated college, I moved to Indiana and I worked as a hall director at a college. So I had a hall of 500 students, and then I had 20 resident assistants that reported to me. And I love people, but I spent all day, every day, listening to a range of things on the emotional heaviness, right? You have things from new freshmen that are at college away from home for the first time that are just having silly disputes with their roommate and trying to help them navigate that. Clear to suicidal ideation that you respond to and sexual assaults that you respond to, like the whole gamut of emotional heaviness. And I always say it feels sacred to respond to those.
I love that. Yes.
Heavy moments. It's heartbreaking that you're there. It's heartbreaking that they are there, but it feels sacred to be in that moment with them. But when you're doing that, day after day, week after week, It's hard, it's heavy. And I was in Indiana and I knew not a soul there. I had moved there without ever being there before. And I think about this all the time. I don't think that year would have been so difficult for me had I been where I have a support system. So I think what you're saying is so, so important because not one singular person can offer that support. We need a whole support system where it is a shared load. So for your team, it's the entire team that's helping share the load from all directions. So then you have five people checking in on you. That makes it so much easier, or not even easier, it just makes it manageable. It makes it doable to navigate the heaviness that you are dealing with every day.
As you're talking about that and sharing your experience, I was thinking about something that I have just been a part of over the last several months. We had a situation in one of our funeral homes in the Denver area. These eight businesses became isolated, one from another, because they were so busy. A lot of the people didn't know each other. They knew each other from email or a phone call, but they didn't know each other beyond that. And if you don't know someone, what's the likelihood that you're going to be thinking about them and their challenge? And so what we did is we brought everybody together and said, we're going to get to know each other this evening. And did that about 2 months ago. Yesterday, I had someone come up to me in one of the businesses, said, that has been just the biggest change because now they know who they're working with and they have a desire to be helpful to them.
Right. So cool, Darren, because that first purpose, what was the language?
Making important and significant differences in the lives of our coworkers.
Yes. Important and significant differences with the people you work with. Well, it's a great point. Like, how can you do that if you don't know them? Perhaps it's counterintuitive to identify how well you serve your customers by looking at how alive the people in your organization are to the needs of each other. But as Darren explained, if we are not seeing the needs of our colleagues, or maybe we're seeing the needs, but if we're not acting on the ideas we have to support them, the likelihood that this same thing is happening with clients is high. Increased helpfulness among our colleagues and clients isn't the only benefit that comes from this way of engaging. It also reduces burnout. Because when what needs to happen is shared across many people, instead of resting entirely on one person, the weight is more evenly distributed. And this approach seems so much more sustainable from a people perspective. But as I was listening, I kept wondering, where the business reality comes into this. So I asked Darren how you ensure that you're providing intentional, sincere, and sustainable care while also ensuring that you're viable as a business so that you can continue offering your services.
We talk about how we bridge the gap between operating as an organization that we're financially sound and secure, but also that we're serving the families in a very ethical and professional way. We want to make sure that we take care of families at a very high level. But if we're not able to do that and be financially secure, there's no way that we're going to be a going concern 3 months from now, 3 years from now, 10 years from now. There's this balance that has to take place. And when you're working with a lot of caregivers, they don't always understand that. So we have to be very thoughtful about making sure that they understand that we have a mission. But if we don't have a margin there, we're never going to have that mission. I'm a funeral director, and I believe in what I do, and I believe that it's one thing to take care of the physical remains of the deceased. The greater call is to actually take care of the survivors. That's a challenge, especially in a society that no longer wants to confront loss like our ancestors did.
Yeah.
So one of the challenges is, as a funeral director, is how do I help a family that when they walk through our doors, they have an idea of what they want, but they don't have a knowledge of what they need. So my objective every day is, how do I get our funeral directors in a position so that their mindset is that they want to take the time with this family? They see the family's needs, much like I had that opportunity with the mother who was the piano teacher.
Knowing that an outward mindset has been critical to the success of your organization, what has made the biggest difference for you as you wrestle with your own mindset?
The most important skill set that I'm trying to develop as I strive to think about an outward mindset is taking time to become incredibly curious about people, because I can't know someone until I become really curious. But what's interesting is sometimes I tell myself I need to become curious, even though I didn't initially want to. Sometimes my motives at the very beginning aren't as sincere, but that sincerity develops, the maturity of that conversation develops as the minutes go by and I start learning more about that person. And the more I ask, the more curious I become, the more curious I want to become.
When I think about situations where I'm inward and I'm focused on myself and I actually know what I should do, but I don't want to do it, is it better for me to do it from an inward mindset or not do it at all? Dr. Jackson brought up this exact same scenario earlier when he shared that he'd been paged because a family had questions for him and he didn't actually want to go.
This one event can throw off my whole day. And I thought to myself, well, I'm sure this can wait till tomorrow.
But he ended up going. And he shared that it took him about 15 or 20 minutes of engaging with this family to shift his mindset fully. And, you know, this is so normal. There are times where it's going to be really difficult to change our mindset towards other people without engaging with those people. And that's what Darren's talking about here, that in those moments when you know the right thing to do and you don't want to do it, but then you actively make the choice to do it anyway, very, very often, as we make that decision and start engaging with the people around us, that curiosity and willingness to see these people will come gradually. It's a dimmer switch. And the cool thing is, the more we practice catching ourselves when we're inward and choose to engage, even if we're not quite to that outward place, the quicker we'll be able to catch ourselves and the quicker we'll be able to make that shift, which will be such a benefit to us personally and the people around us, not only in caregiving situations like we heard today, but in all environments where we're working and engaging with people. Bleeding Outward is produced by the Arbinger Institute. To have a conversation about how we can equip you to transform your leaders and organization, schedule a complimentary strategy session at arbinger.com. And whatever came to mind for you while you were listening, a conversation you've been putting off, or feedback that needs to be shared, action you need to take, don't wait. Take that action, because that's how change starts.